This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, where we preview all the big market stories coming up in the week ahead with Oanda's Senior Market Analyst, Craig Earlham. And it's a very good afternoon to Craig. How are you doing?
I'm really good, mate. I'm really good. I'm off next week, so I am very close to feeling excellent.
Well, that's great news that you're not going to be around for the European elections.
It's almost as like...
It's a bit selfish of you, actually.
It's almost as if I've done this intentionally. Yeah.
No, but believe me, there'll be something to bite back as soon as you return. And talking of those European elections and Brexit, we should talk about the pound, because it's sunk to a four-month low today against the dollar after those cross-party Brexit talks between the Conservatives and Labour collapsed. Surprise, surprise. What was that all about?
Yeah, I mean, what a week we've got ahead of us, and with the pound in as well. The pound's been sinking for the last 2 weeks, and as you say, it's now hit these lows. It started off a bit of a slower decline, and it was initially built. The initial rally was almost kind of, you were seeing maybe some optimism building over these talks. But as it's become clear, what we've been talking about for weeks now, which is that these talks were never going to go anywhere. They were never going to be able to bridge that divide between the Conservatives' ideals and the Labour Party ideals. When it became clear that they were actually breaking down, coincidentally, just around the time of the EU elections, when it became clear that the Brexit Party is going to clean up, then the pound started to fall, because we've now been faced with a possibility that harder Brexit is now back on the table, because both major parties look like they're going to get crushed in these EU elections, and that's going to be sold as voter anger how this has been handled. Let's ignore the fact for a second that voting participation in these elections is typically around 30%, if I'm not mistaken. Extremely poor, extremely low level of turnout, and Brexiteers are incentivized to actually go and vote at this, whereas other people probably less so. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm going to bother going and vote. I might actually be on holiday, come to think of it. So they're incentivized by that. We have Theresa May, who has now suggested that she will resign, basically, after her bill comes back at the start of June, whether it passes or not. So now we have the prospect that that bill doesn't pass, and a stauncher Brexiteer comes in and tries to pursue a harder Brexit or no-deal Brexit. So that now comes back on the table. It's been quite a negative week from a purely pounds perspective. Let's not go into the political side of things and beliefs and that kind of argument. But from a purely markets perspective and from a pound perspective, it's been a really bad couple of weeks, and it could get much worse.
And we're going to have this vacuum, aren't we? Because assuming that she doesn't get her deal through, I think it's a 95% certain, really, isn't it? And then you talked about a possible Brexiteer coming in to replace her. Well, that isn't going to happen until the autumn. So what's going to happen between July and September?
So, I mean, we have to remember that when Theresa May actually took the job, when David Cameron resigned and Theresa May won against no opposition, if I'm not mistaken, was Andrea Leadsom pulled out?
Yeah.
That process was really quick. It feels like such a long time ago.
That's not going to happen again, though.
So I don't think it's going to be as quick this time, but it may not be too long. I think there's going to be more people who are going to try and participate in this leadership contest.
Pretty sure that it has to go to the party members, and that wouldn't happen until later. So they'll get down to the final two. Just like the X Factor, isn't it? Final two.
I'm not sure which. I can't stand more, to be honest.
Before summer's end, they'll get back to the final two, and then there'll be that impasse where people will vote in the constituencies.
I'm looking at this situation. It may not be that quick. I don't think it's going to be too slow. At the end of the day, we're running out of time, so I'm not sure what the process they're actually...
What did Donald Tusk say? Don't waste that time.
Yeah, I mean, we've wasted, 6 weeks of it now
already. Nothing's happened.
So there is the potential that we do just then. To be honest, it's not the end of the world. If we get a new leader in September, it's not the end of the world that they've only got 6 weeks to try and get a deal over the line. As we learned in the lead-up to March, that kind of urgency is needed. We've just wasted 6 weeks on talks we all knew were doomed to fail. That urgency is not necessarily a bad thing. So that's one thing. We could potentially get an extension if we need one. But I think from a markets perspective, it is just that uncertainty. It is the fact that a harder Brexit is now back on the table. We've lost one option at a softer Brexit, which would have been a Tory Labour compromise.
Yeah.
A referendum could have come from that as well. That's now, it seems, a longer shot. So, like I say, a negative week from a sterling perspective. But now next week, it's not just the EU elections, which we have, which I'm sure you're going to come on to next. We've got the inflation report hearing, so we'll hear from Mark Carney and his colleagues. Big sterling event, again, especially in light of what's happened over the last 2 weeks. We saw at the last interest rate announcement that the delay to Brexit, effectively clouds their ability to pursue further interest rate hikes as well. And now they get grilled by a select committee of MPs, some of who are Brexiteers, some of who are Remainers. It should be entertaining. I'm not sure I'm going to be switching on from holiday, but again, another big Sterling event.
Yeah, that's on Tuesday, isn't it? The Bank of England governor before. And then, of course, on Wednesday, we've got the latest inflation figures as well. And as you said, we still don't know what's going to happen with interest rates because of the uncertainty of Brexit. I would imagine that unless the inflation figures suddenly hiked over the next couple of months, it's going to stay as is for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's been slight. It's been a pretty much a round Bank of England target, maybe a little bit shy. If it follows the trend that we've seen elsewhere, then we could even see it drop off a little bit, which I think the Bank of England would be okay with at this moment in time. It gives them an excuse not to raise interest rates at this moment in time. Like I say, a big hike in inflation may put the pressure on them a bit. So I think a little drop may actually appease them somewhat. You look at the US, for example, and I think Goldman Sachs released a report last week showing that inflation may be running around target, but actually it's the tariff goods which are driving that, and non-tariff goods are actually seeing declining inflation. So you look at these figures and you look at the figures that we've seen elsewhere, and I don't think the Bank of England are going to be pressured into raising interest rates quite yet. I still am of the belief that we could see a rate hike late this year,
really,
assuming we actually get through October 31st without an extension or without no deal. But I guess we'll wait and see. Everything changes so
very
quickly.
Very unlikely. You mentioned the tariffs and markets, of course, dominated by the US-China trade talks, and we've got a statement from the Chinese foreign ministry today. And it says that the United States must show what they call sincerity if it's to hold meaningful trade talks. That was after Donald Trump has dramatically raised the stakes with a potentially devastating blow to Chinese tech firm Huawei. So it's not going well at all at the moment. But I think that there is light at the end of this tunnel, and they will do a deal in the end because they, you know, it's in both their interests too.
Yeah, the timing of that national security risk is quite interesting, right? Just as talks break down, it's time to now release this bazooka and see how China responds to that. China's got quite defensive about it. A lot of the, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the local newspapers and things have taken a very strong, almost nationalistic line on this, suggesting that they are in for the fight. They're not going to be bullied. So I think these talks could go on. I don't think Trump's going to get his way quite so easily, and I think he knows that. So the auto tariffs, which were delayed by 6 months, I think that is with an eye on these China talks, saying yes, there's a meeting next month, G20 meeting. Trump and Xi are likely to have discussions at that, but that doesn't necessarily mean they'll actually find a way around this. I think both sides are putting up a very big fight here, and this could go on for much longer. So they've pushed back those auto tariffs because ultimately the US doesn't want to be fighting a trade war on multiple fronts. Europe, Japan, China, they don't want this. This could be damaging both economically, and I imagine at that point you may start to see Donald Trump's poll numbers getting hit ahead of an election year. So I think it's become quite clear this week that this is going to go on and on and on, and we could see more tariffs, and both sides are kind of okay with self-harming if they think it could harm the other side more.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it, really, on this side of the Atlantic?
Everywhere, let's be honest at this point.
Staying with the geopolitical side of things, Iran continues to daunt markets as well. Difficult to see where we're going with this one. How is oil affected by this at the moment?
Yeah, so, I mean, oil did spike initially. So we had the sabotage event last weekend when I think it was Saudi tankers were sabotaged, and all fingers were pointed at Iran in that case. It hasn't enormously flared up this weekend. There was no actual damage. There was no lost oil. But the risk to oil output obviously then becomes significant. How this event is then used in terms of further escalations could affect oil output as well. So this is an event that could potentially keep oil prices higher. But then it's been a weird week on that sense, because we had that event which almost lifted oil prices, but then we had the other event which was markets sold off heavily on Monday. And oil markets do move in a similar pattern to things like the S&P 500, because let's face it, if the economy is booming, people are spending. And demand demand for oil rises, which lifts oil prices. If the economy suddenly plummets and we start to see recessions pop up around the world, businesses suffer, households suffer, spending suffers, and demand for oil suffers, and therefore you see oil prices start to slip. That's the almost traditional supply demand model. So we have seen the oil prices kind of recovered as the week went on, and we had the inventory numbers, which seemed to have a little bit of an impact. We had the slightly higher inventories. There's so many factors playing a part in all that. I think that's what makes oil so interesting right now. That's why I think it's become so interesting for traders, because there's so many factors, whether it's geopolitics, whether it's general economic, whether it is the oil output cut and the impact that it's now having on the inventory numbers. All of these things swirling around. Trump, obviously, naturally at the center of most of it. It makes it really interesting, and I think next week will be no different.
And if you think about it, Trump's a year and a half away from the election. He's got to be very careful that one of these doesn't affect his chances of winning another term, because Iran could seriously affect things, oil price, etc., and the US-China talks. He will want some of these things to be resolved, if not both.
Well, I think there's one thing that we can say for sure. There's two things that Trump pays close attention to. There's the Dow. And its performance, yeah. And there is his poll numbers. And he'll know full well what kind of an impact these things are having on both. Take earlier this week, the Dow fell, 3.5% on Monday. He was very aware of that. And on Tuesday, he came out and referred to the China breakdown as a little squabble. Very intentional words aimed at diluting, playing down how negative this is. Market started to rebound. Wednesday, he came out and pushed back the auto tariffs again. Gave markets a little bit of a boost because this idea of another trade war escalating, it kind of lifted markets. He knows what he's doing. He's keeping a close eye on these two things. That's almost why you look at these situations and you say, we almost kind of need a stock market crash to really to get things moving, to get the gears moving, because as it is, he's going to be perfectly happy engaging in all of in these different types of things. As long as the stock market's at record highs and as long as his poll numbers are okay, I don't think he's going to be deterred.
We've got the Fed minutes on Wednesday as well. What are you expecting with that?
Yeah, it really is a busy week, isn't it? I'm not expecting too much, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think
you're going on holiday. Remember
oh,
that.
I know, yeah, and I'm missing it all. It's a joyous time to be alive. The Fed minutes, I'm not expecting too much, to be quite honest. We've had no interest rate hikes this year. We're unlikely to see, it seems, an interest rate hike this year unless something dramatically changes. Like I said, the inflation number has dropped a bit, which again takes the pressure off. All the rhetoric we've heard from various Fed policymakers, and we'll hear from a number more next week as well, seems to be very much the case of we're quite happy with how things are. Even among the more dovish are saying, they could be a little bit lower, but I'm relatively content. There's no one really pushing. There's very few, if I've missed any, pushing for higher interest rates at this stage. So that will make the minutes a little bit more boring, unfortunately.
Couple more things. Word about the Australian elections. How significant are they globally?
Globally, not that significant, but obviously domestically, very significant. I think we've had six different leaders in the last 12 years in Australia. This hasn't come from snap elections. This has actually come from leadership bids within the parties. Now, I believe that there's been some changes within both parties, actually, to make it more difficult to call these leadership contests to replace leaders on such a frequent basis.
Sounds which familiar.
Makes, yeah, which makes this election quite more significant, because this is probably the best chance that any leader's had in a decade or two to actually serve a full term. I think this could be quite interesting. It's also neck and neck in the polls. Between the two sides, it's almost kind of 50-50. So it's not a foregone conclusion as to which way it's going to go. I think Labour, the Labour Party were slightly ahead. I think it's the Liberals on the other side who were a little bit behind. But when the polls are that close, and we've seen the margin for error in the past, it really could go either way.
They have had a lot of Australian prime ministers in recent years.
They've had 6 in 12 years.
Yeah.
I think it was the stat I saw the other day.
Perhaps it's a sign of things to come for us, because we could have two in the next 6 months, couldn't
well,
we? Or three.
I mean, if it wasn't for Theresa May's stay in power, we could have had two or three in the past 2 years, but she's somehow managed to cling on. It's been, but you look everywhere, and it's the similar trend everywhere.
Volatile,
apart from like kind of the UK, the US, Germany. We've had a lot of prime ministers floating around all over the place, and I think it's really a sign of the times right now.
Yeah.
I was speaking to someone earlier in the office, and it feels one of the things that is worrying right now, I think, is the fact that parties are becoming more extreme, and they are being almost pressured to do so, and it's being welcomed. There's a lot of voices complaining about it, but it's not a coincidence that every country you look at, parties are being pushed to the extremes.
And the mainstream parties are being squeezed.
Well, the mainstream parties are being squeezed, and that's forcing them wide as well. You look here in the UK, you could argue the right's gone further right, the left has certainly gone further left. You could certainly see it in the US with Bernie Sanders in the Democrats. Donald Trump, obviously, as a Republican, almost has become much more right wing than we've probably seen in the past. We see it everywhere we go. I think France is the only exception here, and Macron's under extreme pressures to try and maintain this kind of centre Europhile position, and we've got the Yellow Vest movement. So it's a really, I mean, I'm sure we'll look back on it one day as an interesting time. But
social media, Craig, that's what it's being caused by.
You're blaming Twitter.
Well, not just Twitter, everything really, because people have more access to opinion than they ever have. And they can live in their own echo chamber.
But it almost gives you the ability to say whatever you want,
exactly.
And there'll be no repercussions. Things that you wouldn't say to people's face, you can now express these views. And when the more you see these views, the more it gives other people the impression that they can express them. And
people used to march to the polling booth with little doubt in their mind who they were going to vote for. And maybe we had 20 to 30% in the middle, the swing voters, who would make the decision between one way or the other, really.
I mean, we could go on forever about this, the political situation, I feel. But I think it was really summed up last weekend by, was it Nigel Farage, was it on the Andrew Marr show?
That's right.
And Andrew Marr decided to ask him questions about his beliefs on a variety of things, from gun laws to a number of other issues. And he was furious with the audacity that he had, that he wasn't talking about Brexit. Like, as if this whole idea that we talk about various issues when you're running an election campaign, the need for a manifesto. But that's the way politics is going. It's not changing. It's not slowing down. We are heading more in that direction. And I do think that is a potential concern. But again, that's probably a conversation for an entire other podcast.
Craig, wonderful to speak to you again. So sad that you're going to be going on holiday. Who's in the hot chair next week?
So joining you next week will be my good friend, my colleague over in Toronto, Alfonso Esparza. Been on the podcast before. He very much knows what he's talking about. Hopefully, everyone will very much enjoy it.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.